This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney with Howard Wilkinson. The Local Boys, hometown players for the Cincinnati Reds, tells the stories of men who achieved the boyhood dream of playing for the hometown team. From Ethan Allen to Don Zimmer, The Local Boys includes interesting bios of players we all know: Pete Rose, Barry Larkin, Ken Griffey Jr., Dave Parker. There are also many players who might not be that familiar. Authors Jack Heffron and Joe Heffron are in the studio to talk about the young men who lived here and grew up to make the Reds roster. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jack and Joe, thanks for being here this afternoon. Good
Thank
to see you.
Thanks very much for having us.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the genesis of this book. Why did you do it? You know, I know that the Reds Hall of Fame, obviously, this year has an exhibit of hometown heroes. Of, you know, just about everybody that's in your book. Tell us about how this started.
Well, it actually started with Joe beginning to compile this list of local guys who played for the Reds back in the 80s, starting with Lonnie Wheeler's book, The Cincinnati Game. And we were sort of fascinated by the fact that, you know, as Mark said, you've heard of, you know, some of these names, but many of them we had never heard of, and we were huge, you know, Reds fans and historians, things like that. So he had been after me for a number of years. He said, we got to do this book. We got to do this book, because I'm a writer by background and was in book publishing for a long time. And finally I said, well, okay, but the only way I'm going to do it is if you do it with me. So we decided to do it together. And yeah, well, Joe can talk to a little bit about how he developed his list.
Yeah, how did you do the research, Joe? How did you gather all these great stories and all this great data about these players?
Well, first, as I said, we went through Lonnie Wheeler's book that helped kind of find some of the players. And then, of course, the players since then, I knew from the 90s, all the players who had played with the Reds through then. And once we got that list, we kind of went through some books to find out more about some of the 19th century players. And also, we have a cousin who's very much into genealogy, so she helped locate family members of the deceased players. And
interesting.
Jack interviewed them, and that helped get some of the background information and get a little bit, make the stories more personal rather than just reading statistics. So you had a little bit more of a real story and find out a little bit more about the person.
And that was one of the things I really liked about the book when I was going through it, is that the stories were more personal than what you see in your typical baseball book. You had the stats in there, which is great if you're a baseball geeks like Howard and me. But it's also neat that you have the history and personal stories about these players. It's really well done.
We really wanted to kind of bring them to life because, yeah, you could, in fact, go on Baseball Reference and find out this guy played six games in 1925 and this is what he hit or whatever. But that doesn't really tell you the kind of things that Cincinnati people would want to know, you know, what neighborhoods they grew up in, what circumstances brought them to the Reds, what was going on in the Reds' history at that time.
What and high then, school did they go to?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
What was
right.
the high school called back then?
Right. Yeah.
And then what they did after. So, and that took some tracking down because some of these guys, you know, particularly some of those 19th century guys who played very briefly, I mean, they came on the scene, they played their five games, and they just disappeared. So we took a lot of time tracking down, you know, where the guy ended up. But then, Howard, you mentioned the Hall of Fame. Throughout the process, Chris Eckes and Rick Walls at the Hall of Fame, who I had known from previous books, were just extremely supportive and very helpful in giving us contact information, connecting us with collectors, you know, whose artifacts appear at the hall at various times. And so, yeah, we could not have done the book without our cousin Judy or without the guys at the hall.
So you actually had input in helping to create this exhibit the Reds have right now about hometown players.
Right, yeah. When they contacted us, Joe and I went down there and, really just kind of went through the whole thing with them.
Let's start at the beginning. 1869, Red Stockings, first professional baseball team. I will bet you that most people don't realize there were 10 players on that team and that only one of them was a Cincinnatian. Could you talk about that person?
The original player was Charlie Gould, was the first Reds player. I think at that time, when in 1869, I think the people who were putting that the team together wanted to make this the first all-professional team. Throughout the years before that, there had been players who were being paid or right. they would be
under the table
or yeah. the teams would play a game and they would split the money from the receipts from the people who paid to see the game. But I think the Red Stockings wanted to make this an all-professional team. And I think in a way they wanted to make help produce Cincinnati, help publicize Cincinnati. Before that time, Cincinnati is mostly known as Porkopolis, right. So they kind of wanted to do that. So I think having a local player was very important for them to have.
But
so
Charlie Gould was the first baseman, and obviously he was good enough to be among these
yes.
players, most of whom were from the East Coast.
Yes, most were from the East Coast, and he was good enough to play. He was called Bushel Basket. He was a first baseman. And he was very good at catching throws, and had long arms, and was made him good to be at that position.
And what about? Yeah, I mean, there were so many players. Obviously, you catalog over 100 players in this book with basically 2-page profiles of each. Were there particular guys that whose personal stories stood out to you, you were surprised by something that you learned in your research?
Oh, yeah, actually, probably more, you know, more fascinating, because you know, we didn't know Dory Dean or Dick Scott, you know, a lot of these guys who played very briefly. But it was amazing that once we started digging, that they all had these really sort of interesting stories. Dick Scott is one. He was a kid from Bethel, which at that time, you know, that was way out in the country. And the Reds were terrible in 1901, and a lot of their pitchers were hurt. And so Scott starts writing anonymous letters to Frank Bancroft, who was called the business manager, but basically yeah. he was the GM. And you know, talking about this wunderkind, this kid that's just a man among boys. He's only 19, but he struck out like 95 guys in 5 games or whatever. And the Reds were desperate, and so they, I guess they didn't even scout him. They just said, sign him. And so this kid comes in and pitches his first game against the Giants, against future Hall of Famer Christy Mathewson, gets slaughtered. But they're still thinking, well, maybe he was just nervous yeah. the first game. So then he pitches the second game, gets slaughtered again, and then they realize that this kid didn't really know.
He didn't yeah. have it.
Yeah. No. Nope. So, and then they kind of confronted him, and he said, in fact, that he was the one who had written the anonymous letters. So, yeah, and went back to Bethel. I think he pitched maybe a year or two in the minors, and then got married to a woman who was a British citizen. How he found her in Claremont County in 1900 whatever, I don't know. But then they had moved to Mount Auburn, had a really fractious, very brief marriage, and then he went off to Chicago and killed himself. So, yeah, it was just this fascinating story behind this one little name in history.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation with Jack and Joe Heffron about their book, The Local Boys, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jeremy sent us an email, and he said he's amazed the Reds had a local guy on the roster from 1942 to 2008. Al Lakeman to Ken Griffey Jr. is what he says. And then Jeremy says he's a distant cousin to Eddie Sicking, who played on the team in 1920.
Right, yeah. Great story about Eddie Sicking, who, you know, at that time there were only 16 teams in the majors. So, you know, if you were a AAA player at that time, you know, of any standing, you would be a major league player today. And Sicking came to the Reds. They had their second baseman got hurt. They put Sicking in, just pulled him right up from the minors, put him at second base. This was in
1920.
And this guy, the opposing batter hits a can of corn into short center field. Well, at that time, Ed Rausch was there. You know, he was the superstar of the Reds. And so Rausch goes running in, Sicking goes running out, and I guess it was the shortstop that just kept saying, Eddie, Eddie's, Eddie's. And then they collided and the ball fell in between. Rausch looks at him and says, you know, what are you doing? He says, well, my name's Eddie too. And Rausch was having none of it, apparently. Sicking, we found in an archive an actual audio interview with him that was done in the 70s, and he said that he thought that Rausch guy was maybe a little stuck on himself.
Joe, did anything surprise you as you were doing the research for this book?
Well, what's surprising is how some of them got to the Reds and some had such brief careers. And as Jack was saying, like Eddie Sicking, he had like over 2,000 hits in his minor league career. And a lot of those years he had over 300. And you think, how come they only gave him such a brief chance?
Yeah.
You know, that's what's
Why
so surprising.
Yeah.
Exactly. And one player we talked about is Kent Tekulve, who pitched for the Reds briefly at the end of his career, how he went to the Pirates at a tryout camp, and originally they weren't going to sign him, but because they were short, had some injuries in their low minor leagues in the pitching staff, they signed him for that, and it took him 6 years to make it to the major leagues, even though he was doing so well, but nobody thought he would be that good. It's just amazing how he was in the right spot at the right time, where so many others might not have made it.
And Tekulve was a Hamilton boy. And Hamilton has produced some major league ball players, you know, particularly for the Reds. And obviously the most famous of all is Joe Nuxhall. Did you learn anything much about Joe that you didn't know already?
Well, the thing I think, and we were kind of talking about this earlier, about the difficulty, the pressure that local guys face, that, you know, if you're doing well, you are the toast of the town. If you're not, then the fans expect a little bit more from you. And even though fans, you know, who remember Joe from so many years on the radio, love him, you know, he was actually traded because in the late 50s, the fans sort of turned on him, and he was booed incessantly. And
The irony of his career was that the only season he spent without outside of the Reds organization was a year that they went to the World Series, 1961. But you talk about that intense pressure on the local kids. Herm Wehmeyer is I think, example
Absolutely.
Number one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He pitched for the Reds in the late 40s and early 50s. Tell us a little bit about Herm. He was a Western Hills High School grad.
And was a tremendous all-around athlete. Apparently his scoring record in football from the late 40s was a school record, I think, almost like into the 90s or something. And apparently was a great roller skater. Apparently he worked at the Western Hills Rollerama, or Price. He worked at a Rollerama with Andy Williams, you know, who later went on to success of his own. But because, he was going to pretty much be like the face of the organization, big, good-looking guy, very affable. Had some control issues. And then when he'd be, because he led the league in walks and in hits batmen a number of times. And once his control would go, the fans would get on him, he would start pressing too much. And he would walk more guys, everybody would be upset. And so we interviewed his son, who was drafted by the Cubs.
Drafted by the Cubs. Was the first round draft choice by the Cubs.
They said the family stopped going to the games, and they eventually traded him, and they called it a mercy trade, because
he was like so much abuse from the fans.
Right. And then even came back and had a reputation as sort of a Reds killer when he was pitching for the Cardinals.
And Herm's son, to this day, walks in the Finley Market Parade wearing his father's Reds uniform.
It seems like there was certain expectations that Cincinnatians have, and because he was such a good athlete, I remember finding a piece by Pat Harmon, who wrote, I think, for the
Post.
Yeah. For the Post back in the 50s. And he was saying he was such a good athlete. It was almost, it was just, why could he not be a great pitcher? And and then it seems like local guys like Griffey Jr., when he came, you know, the expectations were just so high. And so if he was hurt or wasn't producing, got into a slump, the fans would turn on him. Whereas a guy like Pete Rose, who's always obviously trying hard and is scrappy and seems to be playing above his skills, you know, we tend to be much more forgiving and love that guy.
Mm-hmm. Joe, was it hard to find enough material to fill the book, or was it and it were a pretty easy thing to do?
Some yes and some no. For some players, there was a lot to have. Some of them, there was not much to have. I mean, there were some players who had such brief careers, it was hard to find a whole lot about them. One of them, of course, who played just one game was Eddie Hunter. He played one inning of one game and found some research on him that he played for a clothing team was sponsored by a clothing team, Camello Clothiers, in the 20s, 1926 and 27, played for a national championship team there. And he got to the Reds because in the 30s, the Reds were struggling because of the Depression. They had a situation where they were down to 16 players, and they were playing back-to-back doubleheaders. And so he was on the bench, and in the second game of the doubleheader, in the eighth inning, the Reds were losing, and they pinched hit for the shortstop. And then in the ninth, top of the ninth inning, he went out the third base, and the third base moved the shortstop. But it was so interesting.
And he did not get in at bat.
He did not get in at bat, and he did not field a ball. So he had
one inning in the major leagues.
It was hard finding even pictures. We have a picture from the team. Camello Clothiers is where we found the picture of him. Mm. So,
who had the longest stint? Did you figure that one out?
I guess it'd probably be Larkin. He was here 19 years. What's interesting about the thing with Barry Larkin is he was played for the Reds for 19 seasons, and in none of those seasons was he the only local player on the team, which is kind of amazing. And that streak actually predates and postdates him. So from 1983 until 2005, the Reds always had at least two local players play for the team during the season.
Yeah, that period of time, and it was basically when Marge Schott was owner, that the Reds had plenty of local players, from Chris Welsh to Ron Oster to Dave Parker.
Yeah, at one point they had, I think they had six guys on the field, Chris Welsh, Barry Larkin, Buddy Bell, Dave Parker, Pete Rose, Ron Oster. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty amazing. I doubt there are many major league teams, if any, that can say they've ever had something like that happen.
So and so recently, you know, you think about something like they had six guys in 1901, but didn't they also have through at various times in the season six guys in 2000?
In the year 2000, there were six, but not all at the same time.
Yeah,
they had.
Well, it makes, you know, one of the things when I read the book I was thinking about was, you know, are there other major league teams that could actually produce a book, you know, of well over 100 local players that played on their team? I mean, I think there's maybe something unique about Cincinnati.
Yes. When doing the research for that, we found that since 1920, Cincinnati ranks fifth in the number of local players who have played in the major leagues, not necessarily for their hometown team, but three of those cities are in California.
Mm-hmm.
So, which of course is a place where we have a lot of nice weather, they could play baseball longer. But St. Louis is the only other city that ranked ahead of Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. So for the size market Cincinnati is, it's done a good job of cultivating local players.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because so many, even local guys who never did play for the Reds. You know, we were just talking about how bad they were in 1901, and actually in the first decade of the 20th century, the Reds had the worst pitching staff by ERA in the National League. Meanwhile, the Pirates won three pennants, and the Pirates had Jesse Tannehill was their ace Cincinnati guy. His backup, Sam Lever, the Goshen schoolmaster, Cincinnati guy, Howie Kamnitz, Charlie Case. So sometimes we were picking the wrong local guys, apparently.
One of my favorites when I was a kid was Jim Brosnan, who passed away recently. Relief pitcher, a very good relief pitcher in the early 1960s for the Reds. Talk a little bit about him, I mean, because he was special in a lot of ways.
Jack got to interview him several years ago, and he went to Elder High School, and originally he played with the Cubs and then the Cardinals, and then he was traded to the Reds. And during the 1959 season, when he wrote the book called The Long Season, which was sort of the first insider's baseball book talking about the players,
right,
and written by a player. And he was traded that season to the Reds. And when he came to the Reds, he really wasn't as thrilled to come to Cincinnati, you know, but it actually turned out to be best for his career because his best years were with the Reds.
Yeah.
And he was just kind of an eccentric character.
Yeah.
Was known as a real maverick guy, who probably why he was traded so much, because he was considered, you know, sort of tough to manage in the minor leagues. We found some information that, I don't know, this was maybe 53, 54. He got a bad write-up by his minor league manager because he would bring books and magazines to read on the bench during the game when he wasn't pitching. They said, you can't do this. Well, I'm not going in. Why do I have to sit and watch? It's like,
his teammates called him the professor.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he would bring along a little, back in those days, you know, the hi-fi, and he would bring these classical records, and so nobody wanted to be his roommate on the road because they would be listening to Verde rather than Elvis.
Yeah. Jack, was there any one of these players as you were doing your research that stood out as the epitome of Cincinnati local boyness?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say Pete. You know, and Pete was kind enough to talk to us for the book, and gave a great interview as always. I mean, the guy can just, you know, he just remembers so much, so many great stories. But because, yeah, I think he sort of epitomized how Cincinnati looks at itself. You know, we don't see ourselves as the biggest and the strongest city. You know, we have to hustle, we have to work hard, we have to be scrappy. And so, you know, he had all of those attributes, and so clearly loved being a Red. You know, it wasn't like he was a Cincinnati guy who was hoping to play for the Yankees. No, this was exactly where he wanted to be. And it just brought such, you know, while as a player, you know, so much pride to the city. He kind of was emblematic of our work ethic and all the things that we like about ourselves.
And even the controversy that surrounded Rose doesn't take away from that?
I think for a lot of people it doesn't. I mean, he's obviously a very polarizing character. You know, there's groups that, you know, put Pete in the Hall, and, you know, others that say, no, you know, he broke the golden rule and he knew what he was doing. And so, yeah, I mean, in a way, it's really kind of almost tragic, because he certainly could be an ambassador for the game when the game's, you know, it's losing its luster a little bit. You know, the NFL is so big, and soccer, people have so many other sports, that he could have been, for the last 25 years, such a great representative of the Reds and of the game.
Mm-hmm. And another local boy who passed away recently is Don Zimmer,
right,
who also went to Western Hills High School.
Right, another West Side, part of that West Side pipeline.
Right. But played only one season of his career for the Reds. I mean, he was kind of the epitome of baseball. I mean, was he not?
Right, yeah, Joe, I don't know if you want to talk
a little. Yes, he was. Of course, he was involved with baseball for 66 years, and he never really earned a paycheck doing anything but playing baseball. And he overcame two beanings, where he was hit once when he was in the minor leagues, and he was in a coma. And to be able to come back from that, and this was in the days when they were just beginning to wear helmets at that time, and to be able to have the courage to come back there, I think most people would have been afraid to stand up there and bat again, but
he was here in 62.
Right.
He was here in 62.
62.
He is the last player to wear number 14 before Pete Rose.
I always get people on that trivia question.
right.
Well, Jack and Joe, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks, you guys. We really appreciate
your time.
Thank you very much.
Jack and Joe Heffern, they're authors of The Local Boys, Hometown Players for the Cincinnati Reds. Next year, Cincinnati hosts baseball's All-Star Game. It hasn't been here in 26 years, so I'm excited. How about you, Howard?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. We'll take a look at preparations for the big event after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.